What's going on, Sharp Football family? It is your resident Swami of Konami, Rich Rebar, and we are here draft week. So we finally made it. All the hot takes, a plethora of, you know, where will J.J. McCarthy go? Who will the Commanders take it pick to? All of it will be answered in just, you know, what, 72 hours from now, a little bit over. You know, with that, just a little bit of housekeeping at the front here. If you are looking for any of the draft content that, you know, myself has done, Raymond Summerlin's done, Brendan Donahue's done, Ryan McChrystal's done over at sharpfootballanalysis.com, you can check out all of that work and get your cramming in. Me and Ray did all 32 NFL teams, went through every roster, talked about their team needs, the strength of their roster, the weakness of their roster, all that good stuff. Brendan and Ryan are firing up mock drafts, keeping, you know, you glued into the latest rumors of the week. And we'll have some betting props, you know, later in this week too, up on the site. And as a reminder, you can pre-order Warren Sharp's 2024 NFL preview book at the site, and you can sign up for me and Ray's 2024 fantasy guide. You can use promo code SAVE5 for that. With all of that out of the way, as I said, we are here in the draft week. We finally made it. And I'm going to kind of take a big like overlook at this NFL draft. This is going to be a monster NFL draft for offense. This would be a huge offensive NFL draft. So we're going to look at this from a dynasty lens. And when we're talking about guys that are like hashtag good at the game, we're talking about, you know, a guy like Ryan McDowell, you know, just absolutely crushing it. He's taken all of my money for the last decade in all the leagues that we're in together. We're talking dynasty football. It always starts with you, Ryan. What's a good word?
Oh man, it's the best week of the year, right? This is it. This is what us dynasty players look forward to so much. You know, sometimes even more than the regular season or the yep. playoffs. This is the dynasty players Super Bowl week.
I'm glad that you kind of started off like that, because as you know, a dynasty players all know, like, this is like the busiest your dynasty league will be, like, these next 2 weeks. We're gonna see
yeah.
it.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. You know, you have rookie drafts kicking off, like a lot of teams trying to like logging into the sites, like making trades, trying to do draft positioning, trying to get the, you know, the players that they want. But you know, a lot of us like probably signed up the last couple of years, like through COVID, we added some dynasty leagues. What do we do if we're in like a dynasty league and it gets busy these 2 weeks, but then it's kind of dead, right? The rest of the leagues, the rest of the weeks of the season, it's just not a hyper active league, or it's mid, half the league is active, half's not. Like, what can we do? Like, because you are the commissioner of commissioners, like you run dozens of, how many leagues do you actually run?
Man, I have cut way back on the leagues that I play in and the leagues that I run. But the ones that are still around are pretty intense as far as what it takes from a commish standpoint. You know, the kitchen sink leagues are my favorite leagues, and you're in, mm-hmm. you know, you're in most of those. I think there's five of them total.
Yeah, I'm in all five.
Yeah. And I mean, what I love about those leagues, they're contract leagues, there's Devy, there's free agency. Like, there's basically something to do every month. We, you know, we get through the NFL playoffs, we enjoy that, kind of take a little breather from a fantasy standpoint. But once the Super Bowl's done, you know, we're doing five different kinds of auctions every single offseason. Now, if you're in a contract league, if you're in a Devy league, that kind of, you know, that kind of allows you or really even demands some level of activity. It demands that you're checking in, managing your roster, following all the league events. If you're in that, you know, kind of that vanilla league, it's tough, because until it's this time of year, maybe there's nothing going on. I like, if I do have those leagues, I like to keep the waiver wire open year round, you know, especially, you know, we had free agency last month. Obviously see some player value changing through that. So if you've got the waiver wire open, you've got at least a little bit of activity going through that. I've seen leagues with required trades. I've tried that in my leagues. Didn't really work. Yeah. That one's a tough one. I like the idea. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the execution really work yet, but overall I would say, you know, when you're coming up with a dynasty league, you've at this point, you've got to kind of have a twist on it, right? It's got to be something special, something unique about that league to make it stand out. And hopefully whatever that is also comes along with some type of increased activity in the offseason.
Yeah, it's real tough. Like I said, a lot of us probably took on an extra league or two during the, you know, the doldrums of COVID, and you know,
Oh, yes.
some of those leagues like worked out, some didn't. You know, and it's like, oh yeah, do I cut this league? I don't want to cut it to like 2 years, but it's like, man, nothing's happening in these leagues. Like it's hard to trade because half the league's not logging in, and I'm sure people have those types of leagues. Obviously, best ball dynasty has gained popularity since best ball's gotten real popular. Obviously, if you're not going to have a lot of activity, you can switch over to just like a best ball format. Not everyone loves that because you're not setting weekly lineups. But yeah, it's just a real tough spot to be in. Unfortunately, we have seen like this last like probably 2 years, like the most amount of dynasty leagues just kind of go dormant because of that. But you got to do your best. But you know, like I said, Ryan's running all these leagues. Let's talk about this draft because like this, like I said, it's going to be a huge offensive influx for dynasty leagues. I know it's not like the greatest like running back class, so we are going to have like a lot of running backs impacted. We're going to talk about those guys in a little bit too. But like, man, we might see like upwards of 20 plus players on offense drafted in the first round on Thursday, and you know, counting offensive linemen, which do
Right.
matter for us in our game too. You know, definitely when I was writing the team write-ups and I'm just going through all these offensive lines, and man, no, nobody has like a great strength on the offensive line. Even teams that are good on the offensive line have like contractual depth or a spot they can upgrade. So it's a good draft for offensive linemen as well that can help us out. But one of the things I want to talk about is the top of this class. If you're in a dynasty league, so I've already done four drafts, huge sample size of four. Go by all what all my leagues have done. They're all happen to be super flex leagues. In all of my drafts, Caleb Williams was not the 101. All super flex leagues, all of them were Marvin Harrison Jr. Again,
Wow.
huge sample size of four. I kind of want to talk about that in a couple of scenarios like gamers might be going through. Obviously, if you have the 101, your team's probably not in a great position to compete. You might have, you know, traded for that 101 pick, or you have it. But like typically in those leagues, like quarterbacks carry so much currency value, and we don't see them really depress in value year over year from years one to two, I mean.
Right.
You know, what are you doing at the top there? Are you forcing Caleb Williams? Are you saying that, hey, what if Caleb Williams is not? Well, let's just talk about Caleb Williams in general. How do you view, because you've been in all these Devy leagues, Caleb Williams, like, do you believe he has like that true, like, can he compete with like the Josh Allens and Jalen Hurtses of the world?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're deciding between Caleb and Harrison at the top, that's really the question you're trying to answer. I mean, I start by looking at our current startup ADP. The first six players in that Superflex ADP dynasty startup are all quarterbacks: Allen, Mahomes, Hurts, Lamar, Stroud, Burrow. So who's closer to breaking into that top tier? Is Caleb going to be in that group? Where he's one of the first quarterbacks off the board, one of the first picks overall off the board, or is it Harrison joining Jefferson and Chase? They're the next two in that line. So we get six quarterbacks, two wide receivers, and then we kind of flip-flop the rest of that round: Herbert, Richardson, Lamb, and then it's already Caleb at 12. So in our startup ADP over at Dynasty League Football, Caleb Williams already the 12th overall pick. You look at Marvin Harrison, he's a second round startup pick. So I mean, that's kind of what you're trying to decide. Is Harrison more likely to be a top two or three wide receiver, or is Caleb more likely to be a top six quarterback? And I think it's close. I mean, the answer could certainly be both, right? I mean, we could, I think that's almost the expectation at this point. If it comes down to it, I've got that 101. I'm still going Caleb. We're talking about the longevity of a quarterback's career and really just how expensive quarterbacks are in these dynasty super flex leagues. I'm not sure. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the depth of this rookie class coming in. I'm not sure we've ever seen the wide receiver position deeper than it is right now, overall, not just the rookie class. But I mean, you grab a top 30, a top 40 wide receiver, and it's a guy like Zay Flowers, a young wide receiver that's going to be a fantasy starter for you every week. So the depth of the receiver position, along with just the cost to get a quarterback in general, is pushing me to Caleb at 101.
Yeah, I mean, the currency of those guys, like you said, is just so great in those leagues. I mean, it's really hard to kind of pass that up. I mean, what if I Is team context take any bearing with you in that? Like, if I somehow, like, I've got 101 and, like, I just maybe had some injuries, or like maybe I had like Trevor Lawrence and he just wasn't good last year, right? I've got Trevor Lawrence and say Kyler Murray or someone, like, it doesn't matter. Is the currency just too much value for you? Like, do you want to play that angle of it?
It's too much for me. And I think the gap, I know some would disagree, but I think the gap from Caleb to the other quarterbacks in the class is wider than that of Harrison to Neighbors or to Odunze even. So that plays a factor in it as well. But yeah, it's still Caleb for me. I mean, even if I've got those two quarterbacks already that I feel pretty good about, I'm still leaning Caleb there.
And how close for fantasy purposes are you weighing in, you know, Jaden Daniels into this conversation at all? Or is there just too much risk with Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, too much risk for me to go over Caleb. Again, this is I know probably an unpopular opinion, but Drake May versus Jaden Daniels is more of a conversation for me. Just the safety that I think there is in Drake May as a prospect versus that huge upside with Daniels. So those are the two I would be debating. You know, if you're talking about probably the four pick in a super flex league, I think we're going to see Williams and Harrison, obviously, as the top two guys. Neighbors often going to be the third pick. And then we get into the quarterback debate. You know, I was surprised with what you mentioned there on your four leagues, mm-hmm. Harrison going one. I look at, and these are mock drafts, but these are, you know, this is typically pretty reliable data we have over there. We've got 10 super flex mock drafts that were held earlier this month. Caleb Williams goes 101 in all 10 of them. So to hear your
I'm playing with monsters.
Oh yeah. I'm sure. But your actual leagues. I love the drafts that take place before the NFL draft. I'm sure that adds a little wrinkle to, you know, watching the NFL draft here in a couple days. You're cheering for those players to get the right landing spot, the ideal draft capital and things like that. But
I've talked about it in a few spots. Are you in any that draft before the NFL draft?
I've done them before, but I'm not in any right now.
Yeah. It's
so who'd you get?
In one league, I actually had no draft picks cause I've lost in the finals 4 years in a row and I keep going for it. And I actually didn't have any draft picks in this draft class, but, The other one to try to think of, the one that I've done most recently, I didn't have a pick until 211. Again, another team that's like I've been just trying to push for getting over the hump. I think I lost in the semifinals last year. I think I was the final four. And I ended up taking Michael Penix in the 211. Again, positional value, super flex positional value type stuff like that. But I've always told people, now, if you're in one of those things we talk about in the open, if you're in one of those leagues that it's like a tweener league, you don't want to move your NFL draft, rookie draft to before the draft. It's just going to turn people off. Like if they're not active before, they're not just going to magically get active. What is cool about if you are in a hardcore league with some degenerates is it does make the, like Ryan said, one thing it doesn't make is the NFL draft fun. You're trying to cheer for your players to go places, but also you have to have conviction on your player takes, right? Yeah. You go back to a couple of years ago. Remember when Hakeem Butler was like in contention for the 101 a couple of years ago?
Right.
Well, he goes pick 100 in the NFL draft. Everyone ejects before the rookie draft. He ends up going like the second or third round in your rookie draft. That didn't happen. Like he was going like 101 to 105 and all those rookie drafts. Malik Willis a couple of years ago in the Superflex left. You know, everyone got to eject. They got a hall pass that drafted at the end of the NFL draft. The other thing too is it creates a lot of people in your league a lot more trade activity because of one, the conviction, I believe in this player, you don't believe in this player. And then also you have more of a layers of like how people treat the NFL draft. A lot of people just use the NFL draft as kind of like the draft doing the homework for themselves. Like this is the draft order. This is what teams value these players. This is the landing spots. And they take all that into account. But, you know, they maybe don't do a lot of research in like rookies or like half rookie prospect models or anything like that. So like those gamers might be more inclined to trade draft picks because they don't have a lot of conviction in their picks. So then, you know, if you play in a lot of leagues, like I know these three or four teams are always shopping their picks And then you can kind of like play like the draft. Like, there's a lot of layers that add to the rookie draft. I think it is fun. If you are in like more of a hardcore league that's active, I would recommend everyone just give it a try. And maybe if they don't like it, you know, you can go back the year after. But it is super fun to play in those formats.
Yeah, we see some of those same things that you described in the Devy leagues that I'm in, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of managers are just simply like out on Devy. They don't want to invest in those Devy. And we're in, you know, for those who might not know, we're talking college players that you roster before they get to the NFL draft. So not just doing a or before they get to the NFL, not just doing a rookie draft a few weeks before, but you know, we have players like Arch Manning and essentially every big name college player is on a roster mm-hmm. already. But we see a lot of managers who are just bypassing that Devy auction or Devy draft every year because, you know, maybe they're not a college football fan or, you know, for some of the same reasons that you described, maybe they don't have that conviction. And yeah, if you do, or if you're a big college fan, you can sometimes take advantage of that. I wanted to ask you, though, what you thought, and maybe you've noticed this with four pre-draft rookie drafts already. If there's one guy, you know, if there's a Willis this year or someone like that who's maybe being drafted in the first or even second round, who you think could be like a third rounder come next week?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the two quarterbacks, Bo Nix and Michael Penix, are really just stand out as being really nebulous right now because, you know, obviously we've got like this gaggle of teams that don't have the ammunition to get a quarterback, but they're desperate for a quarterback. We just saw one team today trade for Zach Wilson, one of those teams. Yeah. That's how desperate they are for a quarterback, is they added Zach Wilson to their quarterback room willingly with capital. Like, they didn't wait for him to get cut. They traded for him like a pick swap. But like you have these teams like the Broncos, the Raiders, and like potentially the Vikings. I think the Vikings could end up being in a sweet spot though, like where they maybe don't even have to trade up and still might get like McCarthy. But then we're talking like the QB4, the QB5s, the QB6s in this class. And when you look at Bo Nix and Penix, you know, from playing in those Devy leagues, those were huge Devy guys, like Bo Nix. Yeah. And like, he was left for dead. Like, he was like 2 years ago, Bo Nix looked like he was like sunk cost Devy almost. And now because he gets the extra year of COVID, he's like resurrected. But if those two guys do end up going in the first round, like we're talking about, they're some of the oldest first round quarterbacks ever drafted. Obviously the circumstances of this COVID plays into it, but then you layer in Jaden Daniels to that too. Jaden Daniels gets that COVID year. So those three guys, I think that while they were popular Devy guys at the time, because they were high recruits, the fact that they use that COVID year to such the advantage, I've talked about this in a call podcast, but like, it kind of scares me. Like, it does kind of scare me that it took them 55, 60 college starts to get their capital to where it is right now. And it does scare me a little bit in these Devy leagues or these dynasty leagues, because I feel like they are fragile. Now we'll see what the NFL actually invests in Penix and Bo Nix. I still think those guys could end up going lower than people think. Daniels is going to go top five because people are scared of potential, right? Like the potential is too great to miss on a guy like that. And we've done the Anthony Richardson thing. We saw like what Lamar did for all that archetype, right? Like, you know, Anthony Richardson, a guy who had supreme red flags as a passer last year, still goes top five because the ceiling potential is just too good. Right. And you know, you'll miss on the league is willing to miss on probably a dozen more Justin Fieldses, right? Because if you run into Lamar Jackson, you'll take those shots. But those three guys do scare me a lot.
Daniels just feels like he has, I mean, we talk about that wide range of outcomes, you know, that gets thrown around a lot. I mean, he's got the widest range of outcomes, right? I mean, he's potentially dynasty QB1 2 years from now, or out of the league. Legit, like, you could tell the story either way on that. And he does have some red flags, you know, the age you already mentioned, his proclivity to take these big hits has been talked about often as a concern. And then again, what you mentioned, just that it took so long, including a transfer, including this ideal offensive system for him to really boom. And yeah, he had a major boom and you know, won a Heisman because of it, but still there's some things that are scaring me a little bit with Jaden Daniels. And that's what leads me to the Daniels versus May. You know, if I've got that four pick,
we'll take it a step further, because you use the currency value of Caleb to break a tie versus Marvin Harrison. How much do you factor in the next tier versus the next tier wide receivers? Because Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze have really high ADP too, I'm assuming, in these startups as well versus those guys. So, I mean, would you rather just say, all right, Caleb's gone, Marv's gone, Nabers is going to hold a ton of value. Do you just go Nabers over May or Daniels?
I would. I would go Nabers at three in a super flex rookie. And then, you know, then I think it gets tough. Obviously, you're talking about the quarterbacks and like we've already talked about, the value and how difficult it is, the currency of that position versus Odunze. And I'm probably gambling on both quarterbacks there. So I would say Odunze at that, that makes him six or seven, however that falls. But yeah, it's going to be so tight. I don't think we're going to see a consensus, you know, top seven there. Those guys, and we can throw Brock Bowers into that conversation as well. Those guys from three to seven are going to be in a different order in every league.
Yeah, let's pivot into that then, and let's talk about after those three wide receivers and after Brock Bowers, and we'll say after Brian Thomas Jr. is kind of like the soft wide receiver four in this class. Like, what are you doing at that next tier of guys? We're saying non-super flex right now, like, you know, so you can factor in the quarterbacks into your answer. Like, would you feel comfortable taking Caleb's 106, 107 in a one quarterback league versus that next tier of guys, the 80 Mitchells, the Xavier Worthies, you know, depending what guy like Troy Franklin gets? Like, what are you doing in that area? Because I got a take on this spot too, but what are you doing? You got 106, 107.
Well, I didn't have to make a pick in that range, like, you know, maybe like you did in these pre-draft rookie drafts. I have the luxury of waiting. So I kind of have Buffalo wide receiver penciled in there, right? Like, whoever they take at 28, I think becomes the 106 pick after Thomas. You know, and that's Mitchell. Maybe that's Xavier Worthy. I don't know that he's the type that they would invest in there after moving Diggs, but Ladd McConkey, you know, maybe it's him. There's a lot of options, obviously, wide receivers that are being looked at in that late first, early second round range. But because it is so ambiguous right now, I think landing spots are going to matter maybe as much as they ever have to start breaking some ties among those wide receivers. And then, honestly, we could see it could be Dallas running back at six or seven as well if the Cowboys take a running back in the second round.
Yeah, so let's assume that happens, right? Let's play a hypothetical, and let's say the Cowboys take Jonathan Brooks. How high does he move up for you in context of this class? Let's say he goes, like, pick. Let's just say he goes to him. Do they have a second round pick? They do, right?
Yeah, 56,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I was going to say 55, 56. Right. So let's say he goes 56, second round. He's the first running back taken. He goes to the Cowboys. How high do you elevate him? Because it's not like he went in the first round. You know, he does have the ACL and stuff. So, like, where do you slot him in to rookie drafts?
I mean, currently in our one quarterback rookie ADP, he's 13 overall. He's the running back two behind Trey Benson. I think he would certainly, I mean, without question.
Well, we can say this is Trey Benson, whoever. Let's just say RB1 to Dallas.
Yeah, I think we're talking about seven or eight overall in rookie drafts. And at that point, I would probably be staying away from that, from that player. You know, I'd probably opt for one of the wide receivers, or ideally I'm flipping that pick for a veteran that I like way more.
Yeah. I've said that, you know, time and again, my process is if I hold those picks this year, I either want to kind of tier up with a future pick plus like something later, or a player that I know is established right now. Cause one thing I kind of want to pick your brain about a little bit is we talk about these wide receivers after Brian Thomas, and does it end up to be in a situation, you know, I was on a show with Scott Connor, and he brought this up that, like, is there any separation for the rest of these wide receivers? Is there ceiling potential for these wide receivers? Or, like, do like these guys end up in like just being like Zay Flowers? Do they end up being like Jordan Addison or Tank Dell? Like these guys that are like Jaden Reed, right? Who you hit on last year. You're happy that you drafted those players and you're happy that your rookie picks didn't bust, but like, are these the types of players that you feel like are going to turn like your dynasty team around?
Well, I mean, you're not, I don't think you're finding a Justin Jefferson in that mid first round, like we did a few years ago, you know, in 2020 or whatever it was, that's where he was coming off the board, middle of the first round in rookie drafts. I don't look at any of those guys and see that type of potential, but you know, quite honestly, I didn't see it with him either at the time, as far as being the best wide receiver in the league, the 101 in dynasty and in single quarterback leagues. So no, I think again, I think more than ever, we're letting the NFL tell us how we feel, break the tie in this, I guess you could call it probably second or third tier of wide receivers and the first tier of running backs. It's the same thing with both of those positions, that we're going to wait for the draft capital. We're going to wait for the landing spots. And I mean, right now, Trey Benson is the RB1 in our ADP. But I could easily see him being the fourth or fifth running back drafted in you know, this weekend. And now he falls, instead of the late first round, maybe he's a late second rounder instead.
Yeah, I told Ray Garvin, we did our running back preview, which originally you were going to do, and I said, you're getting off the hook. You know, the dude just...
I appreciate that.
But I have like a four-man tier at the top of running back because that I think is just going to be shaken up depending where they land and what order these guys kind of go in. But I'm open to the idea of like any of those guys being my actual RB1 of this class. And like you said, if they end up being like the 107 or 108 in this class, that's tougher to pull the trigger on, especially when we're talking about a second round rookie running back, right? Like this is a guy that has a lot of fragility going into the next offseason, you know, which is an objectively better. And I know we hear this for all the time, like next year's class, right? Next year's class better. Next year's running back class does look good, really good on the surface, like really good.
Right.
You know, if you're in the, you know, you're in these Devy leagues, you get a look ahead. And we've seen like some of the major capital spent on some of these guys in these Devy leagues that are finally going to be available for the NFL draft next year. And it is supremely better. So I am concerned about that. You know, I don't want to be careful. Like even if it's my RB1 and it's Jalen Wright and he goes to Dallas or Trey Benson goes to Dallas, I don't want to push that guy too far ahead. But on the same token, like Ryan, how excited are you? And I'm not even making this like a Caucasian wide receiver thing, but like how excited are you to take Ladd McConkey at 108? Like as on your dynasty team, like, do you feel like that's transitioning you like in a direction? Like,
I mean, I like Ladd McConkey. I think he's gained value. He's gained value since the combine. He's nine overall in our ADP. And but yeah, you're right. Excited? No. I mean, if you're talking about an exciting player, then you're probably taking Caleb in that mid first round. Maybe you're taking Xavier Worthy. I mean, Xavier Worthy and you mentioned the running back Jalen Wright. Those are the two guys that I just have this fear that they fall. That they fall further than, you know, maybe the NFL doesn't like them as much as dynasty managers. Maybe Worthy is a late second instead of a late first. Maybe Jalen Wright's a third rounder, not a second rounder. And their dynasty value, their rookie value falls as a result. So those are the two players that I kind of have this suspicion about.
Yeah, I've said like this feels like a great class. I used to use the word arbitrage. It feels like a great class to have like a lot of number two, like second rounders, just because like there are a lot of wide receivers that just look similar to the wide receivers we're probably going to see go at that 1-2 turn. So like, just let me have like two or three shots at that group instead of like trying to thread the needle and say like, all right, here, I'm going to bet on McConkey. I'm going to bet on A.D. Mitchell. I'm going to bet on Troy Franklin, Keon Coleman, whoever ends up going in that area. Just like, let me just buckshot that area and just let me see if I can get lucky to try to luck box into something.
Right. So if you have like the seven or eight, I mean, you're willing to flip that for like 3 second rounders pretty easily, I think.
I think I would, if you can get it. Obviously you need that dance partner.
Right.
That one has those picks and is willing to also bet on one of those individual players themselves, which I think we do have. I'm curious to see. A.D. Mitchell's the one guy I'm curious to see, like how much conviction we end up getting on. One, the NFL draft first, where he ends up going. And then two, dynasty gamers, because, you know, there is a pretty consensus that like this, this guy underperformed for X, Y, and Z reasons, right? So I'm really going to be curious to see like if those gamers step up and are trading for that 107. I'm going to be real curious.
Well, yeah, especially, you know, it really comes to a head if he's the Buffalo receiver, right? If he falls to Buffalo, he gets the landing spot, he gets decent draft capital in the late first, but he was the player that we were worried about. He didn't have the counting stats. He told the media at the combine he never ran a full speed route in his career, and I don't know what he was trying to say, but surely it wasn't that. So yeah, I mean, I'm with you. He's a polarizing player in this class for sure.
Yeah, and I feel similarly about the running back position, like we laid out. Like I want to trade back and just take like let me take like two or three of these guys, right? And like hopefully I, like I said, luck box into some of the. Some production from some of these
guys. So who are your top four? Because I'm not even sure there's a clear top four, at least according to ADP.
Well, I have Benson. I have Benson, Jalen Wright, Blake Corum, and
Brooks.
And Brooks, all yeah. Like kind of in a nebulous spot. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. So those are the top four in ADP as well.
Yeah, I'm willing to be flexible with those guys. Like, and when I say flexible, I mean, let's say they go in the order. Let's say they go Brooks, Benson, Corum, and Jalen Wright, but they all go within a span of a round of the NFL draft. But Jalen Wright ends up costing, you know, the 208 versus the first guy. Let's say Jonathan Brooks is the 108. Like, I'm going to end up a lot more of that RB4, right? Like, yeah. I am that RB1. And that's what I mean by that. Like, saying just be kind of like have some flexibility there with one rankings, but understanding they're still, to me, they're also kind of a tier unless one guy, like, absolutely. Is taking rounds later.
Yeah, so Braylon Allen is right after Jalen Wright in our ADP.
A lot of hopium from Debbie players with Braylon Allen.
Spot after. We're holding on to that freshman season. And then Marshawn Lloyd is RB6, just a couple spots later. And
I love Lloyd a lot.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen a lot of Marshawn Lloyd love.
And like the way I told Ray, like he's a guy though, like I want to make sure he gets the actual NFL draft capital. Marshawn Lloyd totally feels to me like one of these like consensus dynasty, like we talked about. I don't want to label him the Hakeem Butler of this class, but like if we go to this weekend and Marshawn Lloyd goes in the sixth round, would you be blown away?
No.
Exactly. So I kind of want to wait to see the capital with Marshawn and
same
Lloyd.
Same with Braylon Allen, honestly.
Right. So we'll kind of see, but like in these early drafts that we were drafting, like we've seen a lot of in the drafts that were drafted before the NFL draft that I've done, a lot of that tier of running backs, just it was kind of hands off. Like they all got pushed deep into the rookie drafts because everyone kind of knows that, like, we know they're not going to probably be second round picks, right? Because we're assuming, yeah, like, hey, we're just hoping like Benson or Jonathan Brooks could get to that Cowboy spot or get into the back end of the second round. So we know like the guys like Lloyd and Braylon Allen and Audric Estime, like these guys probably aren't going to go second round picks. We're just hoping they go on day two, right? Like, can they still go in the third round? Because then if we're talking there, we're into, you know, Saturday, like then it's on hands off, right? Like we just don't, it could be wild, wild west on Saturday for this draft class at running back.
Yeah, it seems like every year there's at least one. I call them hot potato players. Like, you know, there's almost, you almost feel shameful when you click that button and make that pick in the second round or whatever it is in your rookie draft. Like, everybody on Twitter is bashing this player, but the value just seems too good at some point. So, you know, maybe that's Braylon Allen. I thought for a while it was going to be A.D. Mitchell. And maybe
it feels like it's going to be Keon Coleman, right? Like, is it?
Yeah.
Not,
or, yeah.
Like,
that's yes. Keon Coleman, not Mitchell. It was, you know, you go back to even to February and Coleman was like a top six guy and now he's out of the first round. So yeah, Coleman was the early favorite and it still might be him.
Yeah. And it still feels like if you look at like all the NFL, like the big boards and stuff, it still feels like Coleman's going to go higher than everyone bashing him suggests. So he's probably going to have like solid to positive draft capital. And then you just kind of say like, well, when does it go too far? Right. Like, especially when we're talking about him, you know, does he end up falling like to the 1-2 turn? And like, you have another pick and you take a shot on him. Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that I felt like it was in vogue, but like to trash, but like it feels like now it's almost gone like too far in the other direction. It's like, well, this guy's still going to have a lot of pros in that he's going to check, like in terms of box being checked. So it's like, all right, I'm going to at least play that one by ear and see what happens. Cause everyone kind of dogpiled on him, you know, throughout this process, the reverse AD Mitchell, actually.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's just, you know, that's just the time you take advantage of that, right? The hate has gone too far. So you take advantage of whatever the narrative is. I mean, for years and years, I preached, don't trade for running backs in the offseason. Just don't do it. There's so much uncertainty. You know, their value sometimes remains high while their situation remains tenuous. And now it's gone too far. So now I like buying running backs in the early offseason, taking a chance because the discount is so big. That narrative has been taken too far, I think, that there's value to be found.
Piggyback off that. So this offseason, the NFL kind of told us they don't love these running backs versus what was available in the veteran free agent market. We saw running backs finally bounce back. Teams were aggressive in signing. And not even like the guys like Saquon, like, you know, like the guys like Devin Singletary and like, you know, we're getting signed.
Gus Edwards,
like, Yeah, Gus Edwards, whereas like a couple years ago, like we would be waiting to the draft. So how bullish are you? Obviously, it's a case-by-case basis. Like teams are going to be trying to sell some of these guys. Teams are going to be trying to buy some of these guys. But how bullish are you on trying to grab some of those guys while gamers are trying to get out to help your rosters? Like you said, I mean, listen, Ryan's hashtag good at the game. Like he's got late first and like maybe he doesn't have first. But like, you know, the Aaron Joneses of the world, like maybe the Gus Edwards, like are you willing to throw some of your twos at these guys?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we see the value drop every offseason on these players. And some of them, I mean, Aaron Jones, Derrick Henry, you know, you can buy Derrick
Henry. You can get him for a two, but what's the...
No, but you can get him for a late one. Like, if you've got that late one and it's Jonathan Brooks in Dallas or Trey Benson in Dallas versus Derrick Henry and you've got that championship roster, I think it becomes pretty easy for me at least.
Okay. Yeah, perfect.
But yeah, Mixon, Kamara, you know, really all of those 2017 guys, except for CMC, you can buy most of them for a second rounder and just throw them in your starting lineup. And most of my leagues are start one and with a ton of flexes. So, I mean, that's my forever team build stack, you know, load up on quarterbacks, major depth at wide receiver. Give me one running back that I can play every week. And you know, that's all I care about. I bought like Singletary and Chuba Hubbard pretty cheap this week. And those are my RBs 2 and 3 in one league, but I've got 10 wide receivers that are top 30 guys.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. That's huge. Yeah. I mean, like I said, if you have those twos and you're not comfortable, like with this wide receiver classes, cause one thing let me ask your opinion on that. Like we kind of hinted upon like maybe trying to get a bunch of these guys or the word arbitrage comes to play after the big three, like this wide receiver class has gotten built up as a great wide receiver class. But like, I kind of hit on like, we've got three guys and a soft four that like we have upside, but like, how confident are you that like, there we have like home run hitters like here down here. Is there anyone like you're willing to bet on to say like, all right, this guy's kind of in this area, like maybe AD Mitchell or Buffalo wide receiver one? Or do you kind of see it similarly, like maybe this is just a lot of similar type of guys that we're going to have on fantasy rosters?
I think when people talk about the strength of the class, we've got strength in two ways. We've got the three studs at the top, obviously. But then it's just depth. I mean, again, looking at ADP, Leggett is a guy like wide receiver 10, Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver 12, Corley is 13, Jalen Polk, wide receiver 15. He was mocked as a first rounder, by one of the NFL network guys this past week. You know, Jalen McMillan, Jermaine Burton, these just names on top of names, and we're getting nearly 20 wide receivers deep. So, to say I have confidence in guys like Mitchell or Coleman or Roman Wilson, I wouldn't say I have confidence. I think there's just so many that you're going to be able to find a guy to take a chance on, you know, with your second or even your third round rookie picks.
All right. As we close in here, like these final like 15 minutes, I kind of want to merge this draft class into last year's wide receiver draft class and kind of see like what your breaking points are. And you tell me what pick would be like kind of the the deadline for you of like, this is my cutoff of where I would trade this player for X pick in this draft. So like the first guy like in context of class is Jaxon Smith-Njigba. You can tell me what you're doing at JSN that you took 101 last year. How you know what you're doing? Like what's the lowest pick you would accept right now if you drafted JSN 101?
Oh, it hurts. Are we talking super flex or one quarterback?
You can do whatever. I mean, you can do the world, man. Do whatever.
Man, JSN frustrating for sure. And I do have a couple shares that I think.
Well, how confident are you? Like how much are you believing in like an absolute bounce back? You know, like, you know, where are you ranking him? Where is he in Ryan McDowell's rankings these days at the wide receiver spot?
He's dropping in my rankings. You know, they bring back Lockett. There's uncertainty at the quarterback position, a new offensive coordinator. I think he's going to be good, but, you know,
no NFL experience.
We don't know. From a one quarterback standpoint, I mean, I want him over Brian Thomas, but I'm certainly taking the rest over him. So we're talking about
104.
Yeah, we're talking about 104, 105, or in between there. You know, 105 and something, or you know, maybe I'll throw a little sugar in to get Brock Bowers at 4.
Okay, so then the JSN obviously was, you know, gamers. He let people down, but some of these other guys were productive. So what about Jordan Addison? I mean, you look at Jordan Addison, he had the 10 touchdowns, had really wild splits with and without Justin Jefferson on the field. But also TJ Hawkins is probably not going to play the front half of this year. We don't know who the quarterback is, though, in Minnesota. There's like all these things to do with Jordan Addison. Like, I when I did my rankings, I kind of felt like I had him too high, but then I was like, kind of like, well, where else do I slot him?
Yeah, Addison, man, he showed up after, you know, kind of after that hot streak. He showed up as the dynasty wide receiver one, according to our ADP. I think Keep Trade Cut had him as a wide receiver one as well. And it was just kind of like a shock to the system that he was being valued that highly, that quickly. And, and since then things have kind of adjusted. I mean, like everyone else, I'm a huge believer in these top three receivers. So I certainly want all of those over him. So I would put him after Odunze before Bowers. So we're talking about the 4 pick here.
I should ask you, do you have Addison just outright ahead of JSN at this point?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So do I.
Yeah. I've got, you know, I've got several of those. I guess sophomore now, sophomore wide receivers ahead of JSN. I mean,
okay. So, yeah. So, well, so I'm assuming you've got like Tank Dell.
Yeah.
So, what about Dell. Zay Flowers?
Yes.
Zay Flowers is a tricky one, though, because you look at like the history of Lamar Jackson wide receiver ones, like, they've never had one. They've never had a fantasy wide receiver one in Lamar's era. You know, so like,
no, Lamar's era, this is my favorite. I tweet it out, you know, once a year or something, because it's my favorite stat in fantasy. They have not had a fantasy wide receiver one in Lamar Jackson's lifetime. Literally,
he's been alive.
Literally, their last wide receiver one was Michael Jackson in 1996. Oh, yeah. And last top 12 wide receiver, Lamar was born.
Year, right? The first year they moved.
Yep, I think that's right. Lamar born in January 97. So, in Lamar's lifetime, they've not had a top 12 wide receiver, not just his, you know, not just his career.
Yeah. Zay Flowers is someone I definitely am looking to tier up if I have. I think a lot of these wide receivers we talked about, I'm looking to tier up if I can. What about, here's a guy that like is really kind of hard because I was in on Jaden Reed. I liked him. But like, also I feel like Jaden Reed is, I feel like he's definitely overpriced in opening markets. So like, what are you doing at Jaden Reed?
Yeah, man. I love all those Packer wide receivers and throw the tight ends in there too, but it just feels like there's going to be this weekly cancel out and Reed's going to have big games and Dobbs and Musgrave. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to predict which week is which for those guys. So Reed would be, lower for me if we're talking that rookie compensation, because I've got some of the same concerns. I mean, next week I might give you a different answer, but I'm still valuing him around that 6 pick right now. That's Xavier Worthy in our ADP. Probably wouldn't be worthy for me in my rankings, but you know, questions the conversation that we had a few minutes ago, whether it's the Buffalo receiver, the Dallas running back. That's kind of the range I'm valuing Reed in right now.
And it's interesting from that, from two sides of the coin, because I doubt the gamer with 107 is even going to offer you with a 107 for Jaden Reed.
Right.
You know, and, but like, also like, if you were to float that out, like, you know, they wouldn't accept. It's weird. It's weird how that works out, isn't it? Like,
well, I think part of that comes from, you know, you got that guy with a 3-2 last year. I'm not giving you a mid first for him. And, you know, sometimes it's hard for us to get over that, you know, that value that we had on him just a year ago.
All right. So that, yeah, that spins me. One guy I wasn't even going to bring up with in context of the other guys is Puka Nacua. Obviously, Puka Nacua is just, he was that guy you got in your fourth round, you know, rookie draft. In some of the drafts that I did pre-NFL draft, he didn't even go. And they got picked up on waivers, you know, that first waiver run, which is another great thing about doing your drafts before the draft, is you get these hot guys that weren't drafted, and then their value goes crazy. You get all this fab blown. So Puka Nacua, you don't have to use it as a Puka Nacua reference. You use it a jumping off point, like you just hint on, like, look, any guy you hit in the third or fourth rookie pick, like, are you trying to treat that as like a house money pick, or are you trying to then try to upsell that and get like initial value, trying to cash out? Obviously, it's more case sensitive, but how do you generally play? You've been playing like in these dynasty leagues for, you know, 20 years. Like, how do you usually treat situations like this where you get just this, like, this comment that, like, and I don't want to compare him to like guys like James Robinson of a couple years ago or something like that, but like these guys that go from like really no value to just like a year over year into year two, like he's the wide receiver, like 7.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned James Robinson, because it is usually running backs that we see hit on, you know, that whether they're day three or undrafted guys, whatever it might be, it does usually seem to be a running back. And I think, as far as Puka's concerned, you know, he has one big game, he has two big games, and you're seeing everybody on Twitter or whatever say, take any second for him. And obviously now that looks like a terrible piece of advice, but, you know, I think if we're taking names and some of the numbers even out of it, I think that's generally going to be the play, right? Take your profit, and you know, ride it out while you can, because it's so often those players don't become Puka Nacua, right? They don't become a top 10 dynasty wide receiver, a first round startup pick in single quarterback leagues. That just doesn't happen. And, you know, because of what he did last year, we're all going to be chasing him and trying to figure out. I mean, we've seen articles and heard plenty of podcast segments over the past few months about who's this year's Puka Nacua. And, you know, I've done those myself. You probably have too. Yeah. Just because it's, you know, it's kind of part of the game here. But I mean, the most likely answer is there's not one, because we don't get day three wide receivers that become top 5, top 10 dynasty wide receivers in 1 year. It's just so, so rare. I do want to shout you out here, though. I put this on Twitter as well last week. I host an expert rookie mock draft right before the NFL draft every year. I was looking back at last year's, and with the 412, the last pick in our rookie mock, you took Puka Nacua. So that's how he was being valued pre-draft a year ago, 48th pick overall in a single quarterback. Or maybe that was, I guess that was super flex, but regardless, you nailed that one. So I hope you, you made the same pick. Luck
box. You ignored my first three picks, and that's the beauty of dynasty football. Yeah. I mean, he was a popular dart throw, but again,
if you hit on him in the fourth round, your first three picks don't matter, right?
They still mattered. I wish they were all good. You know, but yeah, I mean, you look at some of these guys, I mean, the company he keeps is all really good, right? Like if you're looking at like the Randy Mosses, the Anquan Bowles, like these guys that had these rookie seasons, like that, like none of those guys really flamed out. Odell is the only guy, and that is like circumstantial, right? Like, you know, Mike Evans. Then you kind of get to like the next tier of guys, and you get to like the Michael Claytons of the world. Probably people forget that Michael Clayton was an NFL wide receiver and not that George Clooney movie. You know, you get Eddie Kennison's,
Eddie Royal,
Eddie Royal, Chase Claypool, even was a guy that, you know, had double-digit touchdowns as a rookie and then, like, basically ghosted us. Kelvin Benjamin, who I think a lot of people, like, saw had 1 foot out on after his rookie season.
Just yeah, you kind of saw that one coming, though. You know, I mean, I do think it might be as simple as wide receiver versus running back with those out-of-nowhere guys because, I mean, even a guy like Steph Diggs, who was the day three pick himself, you know, was productive, not quite right away. I mean, he didn't have the same type of rookie season as Puka did, of course, but was productive early in his career and obviously turned that into a big-time career throughout. So, I think if we get that early production from wide receivers, from those day three guys and pretty much everybody you name there, Claypool and Royal and Clayton and those guys, we're all day one or day two picks. Yes. So, you know, if we see it from a day three guy early on, it's not something to lock in, but pretty safe to say, you know, that might be worth an article. I'll have to look into that one some more.
Yeah. Like I said, I always subscribe for these NFL prospects, you know, the Maya Angelou law, like show me who you are the first time I'm going to believe you. Anytime Puka Nacua like has played football, he's been objectively good. Like, you know, the stuff at BYU and Washington, it was all about, you know, him getting on the field or him having a large enough sample. When people bring up like yards per out run, people are like, it was inflated because he didn't run a lot of routes. He missed time. But anytime he's ever played football, he's been really good at playing football. And I'm just going to say he's probably a good football player using all of those, connecting all of those dots, you know, with that. So, I mean, he's a guy I don't think you need necessarily to be scared of for those reasons. You know, I talked about a little bit on a show with JJ. Let me ask you one thing here, getting out of the door here. One guy we kind of skirted around with is Brock Bowers. And kind of where you are, Smith and Kim. You, someone like I said, you've played as much dynasty football as any person I've ever met. And, you know, how do you treat a guy like Brock Bowers from a onesie positional standpoint? Because we've seen the guys come along that we were supposed to be aggressive on at tight end, the next guy that was going to change the position. And we've seen that this position just doesn't carry a lot of fantasy value in general, even when you do hit on some of these guys. So Brock Bowers, how are you handling him? Is he someone like you, are you taking him? One, are you taking him over Brian Thomas, locking him in, or are you kind of like hesitant?
I'm taking him over Thomas as of now. I think Thomas would have to get that perfect landing spot to flip those two. As far as ADP or if you're trying to find any kind of consensus, I do think we could see Bowers fall and some of those landing spot players, you know, whether it is the same thing that we've talked about, the Buffalo receiver, the Kansas City receiver, if they take one day one, Cowboys running back. I think we could see those type players potentially leapfrog Bowers. And honestly, it's the Kyle Pitts effect. I mean, we fell hard for Kyle Pitts and, although he has mostly maintained his value, I mean, still tight end four in our dynasty ADP, he's been viewed obviously as a letdown after a frustrating year or two. So,
I'll take him. If your league mates don't want him, I'll take him.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's probably undervalued at tight end four and Bowers is right behind him at tight end five. So if you're taking those two over Mark Andrews, who's the spot ahead of him, I think that's fine.
Yeah. And I think in particular in this class helps Bowers out a lot because we always, again, bring up the word arbitrage. Like there's just such a gap from Bowers to like, we might not have another fantasy relevant tight end in this class. Odds are we probably will run into someone down the line here, but the gap from Bowers, the tight end two, is so massive in this draft class where it's not like last year where you get Laporta, but Laporta still cost a, you know, high two, even though he was the tight end two, tight end three in the class. And you can kind of try to play things that way. It's harder to do that in this class when you're taking, you know, the Jaheim Bells or the Theo Johnsons. And, you know, you're just hoping to see that those guys maybe get drafted, you know, sometime on Friday.
Yeah. I mean, we could easily see, you know, we're going to see Bowers top 10, top 15, wherever he lands. And it could easily be day round three before we see another tight end. Even being drafted.
Yeah, Bowers is a guy, I think if you're drafting, even if you're let down, he's going to retain, I think, positional value into 2025, like pretty significantly.
Yeah. And that's the point I was trying to make. Didn't quite get there on Pitts is.
And Trey McBride might've freaked some people out too, about the year over year stuff, even ejecting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, McBride, you know, a nothing rookie season, a huge breakout.
And he starts behind Zach Ertz again last right. year. Like yeah. people forget, like the first 6 weeks, Zach Ertz played over him.
It took injury. It took an Ertz injury to get him there. And now McBride's tied in two over Pitts.
Yeah. I mean, Bowers is going to even if he say he catches 45 balls as a rookie, he's going to retain that. I think tight end four, tight end five value. Like it's going to be pretty nebulous. You know, maybe it gives you some hope on a guy like Michael Mayer this year. Obviously the lot needs to be answered there in terms of quarterback play and stuff. It's looking pretty dark. Sun's getting real low already, but at least you could try to tell yourself maybe, the Trey McBride situation can keep the lights on, but I would probably eject on Michael Mayer if someone's willing to give me anything. Anything. Yeah. If anyone's giving me a two for Michael Mayer, I'm punching that clock immediately. I'll probably take it a three.
Totally, totally agree. McBride was I started to say he was an easy buy. He was an easy buy candidate last year. Yes. But there were a lot of people hanging on and having hope for him still after that quiet rookie season. And it probably just had to do with, Zach Ertz being however old he is and clearly on his way out, that we saw the path for McBride. And I mean, the path is there for Mayer too, but quarterback and coaching and just the curse that is the Raiders.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Listen, I didn't want to turn this into like a show where we try to like do like a bunch of landing spots and have them not happen 2 days from now. I didn't think that really was going to help anyone or do something like that. More kind of like top down of this class and kind of going through it from that lens. I appreciate everything you have to say. Again, hashtag good at the game. Ryan McDowell is good at playing it. Let us know what's going on over at DLF. Like what's cooking there. Obviously this is again, like I said, the heightened time of the year.
Yeah. This is it. That the mock draft that I mentioned that you and I were in and Evan Silva and Matthew Berry and JJ and a bunch of guys, that article posted today that is free for everyone. So go check that out at dynastyleaguefootball.com. See who Rich nabbed in the fourth round this time. Just more NFL draft, more rookie, more dynasty content coming, obviously covering this draft. We're ready for it.
Yeah, beautiful. And as a reminder to everyone, you can go over sharpfootballanalysis.com. Everything that we've covered for the draft is all free on the site. The team previews me and Ray Summerlin have done. The mock drafts, Brendan Donahue and Ryan McChrystal have done. There's a rumors news mill that's going on over there that you can keep up with the latest news, player odds, player props, all those things. You can sign up for the Warren Sharps 2024 NFL preview book still on the site, and you can check out the draft guide that me and Rain Summerlin are going to be adding to all summer. You can use promo code SAVE5 for that. When you talk to me again, we're going to have guys on teams, and we're going to be looking forward to that. I'll be back later in the week to do the round one recap with Raymond Summerlin and Ryan McChrystal. Other than that, good luck to everyone that is counting on their players going to their favorite landing spots on Thursday. We will see everyone later.